Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Susan Shand, Dorothy Gundy, and Brian Lynn. Later, John Russell and Alice Bryant will have this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
The United States has long offered asylum protection to people who have fled their own countries and fear they will face threats or harm if they go back. In the latest available report, over 26,000 were granted asylum in 2015. Many came from China, El Salvador, and Guatemala. However, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions said recently, the current system is hurt by a lot of abuse and fraud, and he demanded stronger rules for people seeking asylum in the U.S. Sessions said current policies let some people enter the country without a good reason. The immigration court system, he added, is overwhelmed with 600,000 cases awaiting a hearing, although not all are asylum cases. President Donald Trump has called for major changes to immigration and asylum rules. He has called the current system broken. Asylum seekers could face persecution because of their race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. The requirements are part of the Immigration and Nationality Act. It is a 1952 law to protect refugees in the U.S. that has been updated over the years to meet changing needs. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security supervises immigration. Recently, the department's Executive Office for Immigration Review wrote a document which could influence how judges consider some asylum cases. The document deals with people younger than 18 who entered the country without their parents. It suggests that these minors could find it harder to seek asylum if they are reunited with their parents in the U.S. The document says such young people could lose protections under a 2008 law if they turn 18 during court proceedings. Another possible new standard for immigration judges could require faster decisions on immigration issues in court. The Department of Homeland Security says asylum laws exist to ensure due process. The laws oversee anyone caught at the U.S. border without documents, or immigrants detained by the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Any foreign national can seek asylum protection, no matter what their immigration status is. However, asylum seekers have to apply within 1 year from the date of their last arrival in the U.S., or show an exceptional change in their situation. Most importantly, asylum seekers must prove to the asylum officer that they have a credible fear of returning to their home country. In his speech, Sessions said many asylum cases were not real. He added that the system cannot deal effectively with just claims, and the increase in trials and court actions has been overwhelming. Sessions said the number of people claiming they had a credible fear of returning to their home country had increased very sharply. In 2009, there were 3,000 cases. By 2016, there were more than 69,000 cases. Sessions added that 88% of asylum cases are approved. Numbers from the U.S. Customs and Immigration Service show that the approval rate for 2017 was 76%. Mana Yagani is an immigration lawyer in Houston, Texas. She said the credible fear interview is a very difficult process for people seeking asylum. I had a client who went through a credible fear interview, Yagani said. She was 19 and she had been gang raped. Yagani went on to say that the interviewing officer was a male, and her client could not tell the officer about the gang rape. She was scared, so she failed the interview, Yagani said. An immigration judge reviews the questions an interviewing officer asked an asylum seeker if a credible fear claim is denied. The judge wants to know if there were errors or if the officer missed something. Lawyers for the asylum seeker, however, cannot speak or present new evidence during the hearing. And the immigration judge's decision cannot be appealed. Hearings on credible fear claims usually last between 5 and 10 minutes. Yagani said once she had photographs of dead people from a person's family that she wanted to introduce as evidence, but they were not accepted. Lawyers say that asylum seekers also must show that law enforcement or government officials in their home country did not protect them. Yagani said this could lead to denial of a credible fear claim because you have to establish proof that your government is not willing to support you. Yagani said that many of the people she represents come from countries where they do not trust the police. They also may fear officers could raid their homes or harm their families. However, some immigration groups note that it is very difficult to know if asylum seekers are telling the truth. The Federation for American Immigration Reform is a group pushing for reform of immigration laws in the U.S. On its website, the group says, because of the nature of asylum claims, the claimant's true background and history are difficult to verify. As the number of cases increase, so has the number of people waiting for court hearings. The Associated Press has reported that about 70,000 asylum seekers were being held at family detention centers waiting for a hearing. I'm Mario Ritter.
Former United States Secretary of State Hillary Clinton criticized President Donald Trump this week on her visit to South Korea. Clinton, a former U.S. presidential candidate, said she disapproved of Trump's angry words about North Korea. "There is no reason for us to be bellicose and aggressive," she said in a speech to the World Knowledge Forum in Seoul.
Clinton expressed concern about the president's description of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un as Little Rocket Man. She also criticized Trump's threats to answer a North Korea provocation with fire and fury. Clinton said that threats to start a war are dangerous. She noted that a conflict with North Korea could endanger millions of people if a diplomatic solution is not found. She also said that starting fights with Kim Jong-un puts a smile on his face and gives him the attention he wants. Recently, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson defended Trump's public words and comments on the Twitter messaging service. Tillerson said they help to create action-forcing events to move diplomacy forward.
While Clinton disagreed with Trump's words, she seemed to support his administration's efforts to pressure North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons program. She agreed that North Korean plans to develop a nuclear-armed ballistic missile that can reach the U.S. mainland represent a serious threat to the United States. But the former Secretary of State did not suggest other ways to prevent North Korean testing and offered no ideas to start talks. She did not say anything about the Russian and Chinese plan to suspend the North Korean nuclear program if the U.S. and South Korea end military exercises. Instead, she said that other countries, including China, should increase economic pressure on North Korea. She also said the U.S. and its allies need to have strong military defenses. Clinton also was critical of Chinese actions against South Korean businesses operating in China. The actions came after the United States deployed an anti-missile system in South Korea.
Clinton said the actions of the United States and its allies should react with proportional force to North Korean actions against their interests. Trump has said the United States would totally destroy North Korea if attacked. Any preventative military action directed at North Korea's nuclear or missile test areas could start a war. Some leaders and observers say economic pressure alone will not make the North Korean leadership give up its nuclear activities. Gary Seymour is with the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. He believes Americans must accept the idea that North Korea will have nuclear arms. He thinks it is no longer realistic to believe the situation can be reversed. Seymour worked as an arms control expert in the administration of former U.S. President Barack Obama.
Clinton also said the action of the United States must be calm and predictable to keep peace in Asia. Trump's methods, she believes, have been dangerous and damaging.
She said U.S. allies have expressed concerns about whether they can depend on the United States. They note Trump's comments about unfair trade and criticism of allies for failing to provide enough financial support for U.S. military forces. President Trump is set to make his first official visit to Asia early next month. He will visit Japan, South Korea, and China before going to attend trade and security meetings in Vietnam and the Philippines. The South Korean presidential office said that it expects the U.S. president to talk about relations between the countries and North Korea's activities. The office said it also expects Trump to explain his policy for the Korean Peninsula and Northeast Asia. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Susan Shand.
President Donald Trump's wealth saw a major drop in the last year, mainly because some of his properties decreased in value. American business magazine Forbes says Trump's net worth fell $600 million to $3.1 billion over the past 12 months. His net worth was estimated at $3.7 billion a year ago. Each year, Forbes puts together a list of the 400 richest Americans. This year, Trump was number 248 on the list, down from 156 in 2016. According to Forbes, much of Trump's wealth comes from a group of New York City luxury buildings in and around Manhattan. The magazine said property values in the area have dropped recently. One of the buildings is Trump Tower, the headquarters for Trump's businesses. Trump also lived at Trump Tower with his family before moving into the White House. Trump also owns many other properties, including golf courses, in the United States and around the world. He also owns a winery and licenses his name to many companies worldwide. Forbes also said Trump's wealth dropped because he spent $66 million on his presidential campaign. He also paid $25 million to settle a legal action against him by former students of Trump University. A few of Trump's properties did rise in value last year, the Forbes report says. One was a hotel and residential building in Las Vegas, Nevada. The other was an office building in San Francisco, California. Trump is the first billionaire to become president of the United States. He gave his two oldest sons control of his businesses while he serves his presidential term. Every name in the top 10 belonged to a white man. Two women, both white, are in the top 20. Alice Walton, an owner of the Walmart company, and Jacqueline Mars, whose riches come mainly from the candy and pet food industries. Two African-American billionaires made the list. Investor Robert Smith came in at number 226, with a net worth of $3.3 billion. Media businesswoman Oprah Winfrey was number 264, with an estimated worth of $3 billion. Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates took the top spot on the Forbes list for the 24th year in a row. His net worth was estimated at $89 billion, up $8 billion from a year ago. At number two was Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, who added $14.5 billion to his wealth over the past year. The third richest American on the list was businessman and investor Warren Buffett. He was followed by Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, who had the biggest overall wealth increase of anyone, $15.5 billion. Overall, the magazine said it was another record year for America's wealthiest people. To make the Forbes 400 list in 2017, people had to be worth at least $2 billion. The group's total net worth climbed to $2.7 trillion, up from $2.4 trillion a year earlier. The average net worth for the wealthiest Americans rose from $6 billion to $6.7 billion. I'm Brian Lynn.
The 1994 crime film Pulp Fiction tells the story of a gunman played by Samuel L. Jackson. In the film, the gunman is growing tired of his life of crime. Near the end of the movie, he gives two other criminals a chance to leave a bad situation.
The truth is, you're the weak, and I'm the tyranny of evil men. But I'm trying, Ringo. I'm trying real hard to be the shepherd.
Go.
I think we should be leaving now.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
In this program, we explore the meaning of a word you heard in the recording, the pronoun that. And we will look at how Americans use this word in everyday speech. You might be surprised how often Americans use it for different purposes.
On another Everyday Grammar program, we explored the many uses of the word that. That belongs to a group of words called demonstratives. Sometimes demonstratives act as pronouns. When acting as pronouns, they suggest that nouns are either close to the speaker or far away. In American English, speakers use the word that to mean people or objects that are at a distance. But they also use it in other ways. For example, English speakers often use the word that to give an opinion about something or to repeat the main points of a conversation. We will now look at each of these uses in greater detail.
Speakers often use the word that in sentences that give an opinion about an idea or situation. They do this by using the structure that's plus an adjective or that's plus a noun phrase. This audio from the 1996 film Fargo gives an example of the first structure.
Hey,
They announced it.
They announced it?
Yeah.
So?
3 cent stamp.
You're Mallard?
Yeah.
That's terrific.
The term "that's terrific" is an example of "that's" plus an adjective. Here, the word "that" means the idea or situation presented. In other words, the new stamp. The adjective "terrific" gives the speaker's positive or good opinion about the stamp. There are any number of adjectives that speakers use to express their opinion. A few other examples are "that's cool" or "that's awesome," two common expressions among younger Americans. English speakers also use the "that's" plus a noun clause structure to give an opinion about a situation or idea. Think back to the lines you heard at the beginning of this program.
I think we should be leaving now.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Here, the word "that" means the idea that came in the earlier sentence, "I think we should be leaving now." The speaker gives his opinion about the idea by using the noun phrase "a good idea." The word "probably" changes the force of his statement.
The second common structure in everyday speech is "that's" plus a WH clause. A WH clause suggests a group of words beginning with the letters W and H, such as "why" or "what." Speakers use this structure when they are noting the main points of earlier statements in a conversation. The comedy film Clerks has an example of how speakers use this structure in everyday speech. Here, the actors are having a debate about the best Star Wars movie.
Empire had the better ending. I mean, Luke gets his hand cut off, finds out Vader's his father, Han gets frozen and taken away by Boba Fett. It ends on such a down note. I mean, that's what life is, a series of down endings.
The main speaker makes several statements and then closes with the words, "That's what life is, a series of down endings." The word "that" means the ideas presented earlier, namely, a series of bad events. Hopefully, you do not agree with the speaker's opinions of life.
Instead of giving you a down ending, such as in the line from the film Clerks, we are going to end on a positive note. Learning and understanding the uses of pronouns, such as "that," can be difficult, but you will be successful if you take a few simple steps. The next time you are watching a film or talking with English speakers, try to listen for examples of the word "that." Ask yourself the following questions. Do the speakers use it to give their opinion? Do they use it to summarize the conversation? Then, find a person to practice with. Try to use the word "that" when speaking to them. Let us know if you have any questions. We are always happy to help. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.